morning, and you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. Ic chat to Newster and Glorinov. No, call for feeder school policy at Colossia Aine. Piate and Electric Ireland launched 2024 Darkness into Light in Connacht to raise vital funds for their suicide prevention services. National Bike Week approaches next week. Poor engagement with warehouse tech's deadline highlighted by restaurateurs. We have the Connacht Tribune headlines. UK ME expert to give 5 free talks in May. ME Awareness Month as part of a national tour, including one here in Galway. There's a warning over rising worker mental health concerns. In Culture Corner, we hear from Portumna Community School ahead of the musical. We've asked Protect and Music Mornings. Good morning. Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks. If you want to get a comment into the programme today, you can on our text and WhatsApp number. That's 086-3833-553. You can phone Avon Reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Now, there's a call locally in Salt Hill for the restoration of a Scoil Aine Primary School as a designated feeder school for Colossia Aine Secondary School. This initiative seeks to reverse changes made a decade ago, which has since disrupted traditional educational pathways and have adversely impacted local families. To discuss this now, I'm joined by two local families in the Salt Hill area who have been affected by these proposals. We have John Tyrrell and Sharon McManus. You're both very welcome onto the programme today. And John, I'll start with you first. Has this worsened over the past decade, or why the call now for the restoration of the feeder policy?
Good morning, John, and thanks for having us. Yeah, look, what we wanted to discuss really is the situation and how it's affecting the families and the environment in the local community, because this disconnect is causing a lot of stress for local families. Previously, Scoil Aine functioned as a feeder school for Colossia Aine, and the transition was smooth, but the current system is now a full lottery system, which means the majority of children finishing up in Scoil Aine end up going to secondary schools outside of our parish or across town. And when you consider, like, on top of the uncertainty and stress that it causes parents, it's leading to a significant increase in car journeys for school runs, which means more cars on the road, higher emissions and worsening traffic congestion. And even beyond that, we're also deeply concerned about safety and student safety, because longer commutes expose our young children to, you know, additional risks, especially when you consider the weather in Galway and unsupervised travel across the city. So we're urging Bishop Dyden and the Board of Management of Colossia Aine to reassess this policy, and looking to reinstate Scoil Aine's feeder school status, which would obviously ease stress in the area, but also align with the Department of Education's vision for a greener and safer future when it comes to schools.
Okay, so it is the Bishop and the Colossia Aine Board of Managers that have the power here to make this change.
Yeah, it's a school admissions policy, John, yes, so it is within their gift to change the policy.
Has it worsened over the past few years since the decision was reversed 10 years ago?
It has, yeah. I attended both schools myself a long time ago. It's greater than 10 years. but if you look at last year, the sixth class cohort in Scoil Aine, there were 25 in the class. Only 5 were accepted into Colossia Aine last year. And of that 5, actually 4 were due to the sibling policy. So actually only 1 person out of 25 got into Colossia Aine as part of the lottery system, which is a very, very low percentage.
Mm. Is part of the problem pupils coming from other areas in the hinterland that don't have a secondary school themselves? I'm thinking the likes of Mike Cullen, etc.
It would be, yeah. And I mean, like, you know, people need access to schools regardless of where they're from, you know. And if there's no access in Mike Cullen, for example, like, I'm fully supportive of children coming into Colossia Aine or other schools in the city to get their education, that's fine. But the issue I would have looking at this as a parent is I can see Colossia Aine from my house, yet I have a 7-year-old son who's in Scoil Aine. He will go to Scoil Aine Primary School, and I don't know if he's going to get a place in Colossia Aine Secondary School, even though it's a 3-minute walk for him, which is very important.
I know there's going to be a stakeholder meeting next week. Are you hopeful to get a good outcome out of that?
We would. Yeah, we would. I mean, speaking to parents in the area, and, you know, Sharon's children were slightly older than mine, and she would have experienced this too. There is a lot of concern in the area around this kind of lack of certainty of access for the secondary schools in the area. So I would expect we will have quite a lot of support for this in the local area.
And before I do go to Sharon, how has this affected your family personally, John?
Well, like I said, John, I have two young girls, and so they have a lot of certainty about going from Scalesia to Salerno, whereas my youngest is a boy. We don't know what it's going to look like for us when he gets to secondary school. You know, I don't think it makes any sense for me to have to hop in a car when he's in first year and drive him to a school, you know, anywhere, you know, from 5 to 10 kilometers away, or ask him to hop on a bike in a particularly unsafe city for cycling when he could just walk across the road. You know, it's adding to congestion, it's adding to environmental issues, and there's no sense to it.
Okay, let's bring in Sharon McManus now. Sharon, good morning. How is this affecting your family?
Good morning, John. Thanks for having us. Yes, so we have three children. Our oldest is in sixth class, and he, like many in his class, would have applied to Cluais Éireann for a place for September 2024, but he wasn't successful. And we were lucky enough to get a place in another school in the city, which we're very grateful for. But obviously, we would have preferred our child to be able to walk or cycle to the local school. And just like John, very, very close to us, we can practically see it from our house, and to walk over would be such ease. And I suppose at this stage for young people, as they move into the teenage years, it's all about increasing autonomy and independence, and that they are able to access the school in a safe and secure way, without having to commute or travel across the city. And as John said, you know, the issues with traffic congestion in the area and the environmental impact of all of that is quite serious for us and everyone else. So we were faced with that uncertainty of not knowing where our son would get a space, or even if our son would get a space. I mean, there are children in that sixth class who still don't have a space for post-primary in September 24. So it's a very stressful time and great uncertainty. And, you know, to have that access to our local school would just really help in terms of community and cohesion, and especially in terms of the active schools policy, where children can walk or cycle in a safe way, and really to have that ease for parents around road safety issues would be very, very helpful.
But it also discommodes parents in terms of if they're in work at the time and then having to get off work to drop your kids if you have to go across the city or to elsewhere.
Well, that's it. And that, you know, the traffic times and commute times for short distances in Galway City can be quite extensive. And you can have parents indeed going to two different secondary schools, because girls might be attending, you know, Salerno or the Dominican or others, and boys might be going to the Bish or other schools in the city. So it puts a huge strain on families who are really trying to meet all the needs within the family and for themselves and their work and everything else. And it's an unnecessary strain sometimes, you know, where there is a local school available. And it does make sense that the local community should be able to access that. And it helps build community and cohesion to have that access in place.
I imagine very difficult for parents and students who might have students and pupils who are more vulnerable as well, Sharon.
Absolutely. And there are children in Scalena and in every school in the parish and around who have extra needs, be they learning needs, physical, sensory needs. And for them, the access, you know, to secondary school can be challenging to begin with, in that it's well known nationally that there are difficulties with the number of spaces available for children with extra needs. But to have access to your local community and to your local school really ensures that young people who have extra needs are embedded in their local community, are visible and connected. And that's something that's sustainable into the future. And for young people who have extra needs in their families, there's often more required of parents in terms of attending the school for meetings and planning and working together with in collaboration with the school team. And also those children are often attending local HSE teams or other agencies to meet their health and learning needs. So if you add on top of that an extra commute and issues around safety and travel, it really can, you know, reduce the equality for those children, and the access in general to those schools can just add another challenge to families who are already facing potential inequalities or resource issues.
Yeah. I want to go back to John Tyrrell now. John, as we mentioned, the public meeting is taking place this day week, Thursday the 16th of May at Sgueleinia. And are all welcome to attend, or what's the policy there?
Yeah, all are welcome to attend, John. Yeah, it's at 7 p.m. in the hall in Sgueleinia Primary School on Dr. Monix Road on Thursday the 16th. Anybody who has an interest in this is welcome to join. We want to hear as many views as possible as we can on this, and, you know, get an understanding for the level of support that we believe is out there for pushing for this change.
All right, John Tyrrell and Sharon McManus, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. Coming up next, we're looking at a fundraising initiative for Pieta. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road. A new way to car shop.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and it's all happening this weekend with Darkness Into Light. I'm joined in studio by Joe Burke, who's the Regional Fundraising Officer with Pieta. Joe, good morning, and it's going to be busy, what, tomorrow night, I believe?
Yeah, good morning, John. Thanks so much for having me in. So all the preparations are underway there for quite a few weeks all around the country and particularly in Galway. I'm getting ready for tomorrow night or Saturday morning at 4:15.
And you've teamed up with Electric Ireland to launch the Darkness Into Light in Connacht. Talk to us about what's happening this year. There's a lot of exciting music and different bits and bobs happening.
Yeah, so all of the committees right around the country, and as I say, particularly the 20 venues in Galway, who are all organised by volunteer committees, they're putting a huge amount of work and effort into getting the venues to be the best that they can be for tomorrow night or Saturday morning's event. Many of them have got music en route while you're doing your 5K walk. A lot of them have really great kind of refreshments and entertainment and stuff like that when you get back from the 5K walk just at dawn.
And talk us through some of the acts. I know there's some great Galway talent on show here locally.
Yeah, so I know in Salt Hill, which is probably the biggest venue here in Galway, they've got quite a few different bands on board. So they've got music when people are leaving from the start line at 4:15. And then they've got some music en route again. And again, when they come back, there's a surprise guest when people come back from the 5K walk.
Brilliant. And it's happening right across the country as well. Darkness Into Light, it's been, I suppose, one of those big fundraising events for charities and the great work that you do. Just talk to us about what you do locally here in Pieta.
Yeah, so we're actually very lucky in Galway to have two centres. So we have one centre in Tuam and one centre in the city on Merchants Road. So Pieta provides freely accessible services, free of charge, to people who have been bereaved to suicide, and also people in suicidal crisis, and to people who are engaging in self-harm. And we receive probably about just over 85% of the funds that we need to sustain our services from the general public. And a huge part of that comes through Darkness Into Light. So it really is our flagship fundraiser.
Wow. And that work you're talking about is very crucial, particularly we've seen different mental health reports and deteriorating mental health. Has it been a pressure on your services over the past while?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've all felt the different pressures since COVID, and we've actually seen a huge increase in the demand for our services since COVID. So we know that about 40% of the clients that we see are actually under the age of 18. So it's hugely important to us that we're able to sustain those services, and that's really what Darkness Into Light does for us.
Mm. I'm just looking at some of the figures here. Around 100,000 crisis calls and texts to the helpline last year. That's a huge number. Huge amount of people looking for help.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do have quite a few different avenues for people to kind of reach out to us. So obviously one is our 24-hour helpline number, which is 1-800-247-247. And that's manned by fully qualified therapists. And a lot of those calls would be converted into actual in-person or online or over the phone therapy sessions where people would actually engage with our free of charge therapy.
Mm. You mentioned that Darkness Into Light is your flagship fundraiser, and I think the message of it from the darkness into the light, and you're literally doing it as well. It's a lovely kind of metaphor for the work you do.
Absolutely, yeah. So it really reflects the actual journey that our clients go on. So when they come to us in crisis and they go through their therapy with their qualified therapist, and through that journey, they actually come out and they're able to live maybe a much more fulfilled life, you know, with a much lighter sense, we'll say. And the concept of darkness into light was actually born 15 years ago this year in Dublin in the Phoenix Park, where actually just 400 people turned out to the very first event. And when we think about the growth over those years with the support of Electric Ireland, to 100,000 people we're expecting to turn out on Saturday morning. Yeah.
Yeah. If people want to sign up and get involved and help donate towards it, what's the best way of doing that?
So people can still sign up and register on darknessintolight.ie. And people can also turn up on the morning. They can make donations at any of the 20 venues across the county.
And in terms of people who need your services for support, it's a mixed bag, really. You can go from, I suppose, the very dark end to also just people who might be struggling with their mental health.
Absolutely, yeah. So, we see a huge variety of people from, we'll say today, for example, our therapist could see people from as young as maybe 8 up to 80, you know what I mean, across all walks of life. All genders and all religions are welcome. We're totally open for absolutely anybody.
And in terms of if people want to use Clive's your services and contact you, what's the best way of doing that?
So I suppose our 24-hour helpline number is the first port of call for people. Mm-hmm. People can also get to us through our website, through all social media channels. People can text, people can literally call up the centres, people can actually pop into the centres. Mm-hmm. If that's how they want to get involved.
Brilliant. So that helpline is 1800 247 247, and the text line is 51444 as well. Joe Burke, the Regional Fundraising Officer with Pieta, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks so much for having me.
Still to come on the programme today, we're looking at a lovely initiative. It's National Bike Week next week, and Una McArdle, who is the secretary of Galway-based Cycling Club, joins us in studio. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and we're looking at National Bike Week, which gets underway in earnest this weekend. I'm joined in studio to discuss this by Una McArdle, who is the secretary of Galway-based Cycling Club. Una, good morning, and it's an exciting week for all the cyclists across the city and county.
I suppose every week could be an exciting week if you're cycling your bike, but especially when the weather is good. But yeah, Bike Week is a national initiative which aims to try and support and promote cycling. It runs from the 11th to the 19th of May, and there's all kinds of stuff happening around the country and in the county. Now, I don't know an awful lot of what's happening. If people are interested, they can Google Bike Week 2024 and find out stuff. Mm. But I'm here to talk about some of the things that we're doing.
Yeah, talk to us about what you're doing there in Galway-based Cycling Club.
Okay, so one of our members, Debbie O'Flaherty, is a member of staff in the University of Galway. She works in buildings and estates. And we were talking one day and we decided we might collaborate to do something for Bike Week. And as a result, we have a schedule of things happening on Wednesday, the 15th of May, which is next Wednesday, happening on the day. So I'll go through those if you like.
Yeah.
Okay. So so one of the things we managed to do is get the Road Safety Authority interactive unit, which apparently is a big mobile kind of shuttle bus, which is not bringing anybody anywhere, but has interactive virtual reality type situation things happening in there. I've never been in it. But within there, you can have the experience of cycling the bike, riding a car or riding a motorbike. But obviously we're kind of trying to get people to go on the bike bit. So that's there for the day. It's there from 9 till 4 p.m. In tandem with that, we have two talks happening on bike safety and just managing yourself on the bike in sometimes dangerous environment with cars. And that's 11 and 2 p.m. And in between, we're doing two things ourselves, Galway Bay Cycling Club. So at lunchtime, between 1 to 2, we have something happening called Bike Right, which is bike skills. So people come with their bike and we do bike skills training with them just for the hour, doing things like braking, cornering, using gears, riding in groups. And then in the evening, we have a bike mechanics session with some of our own bike mechanics. Well, they're people are mad into bikes and good at them. And basically, you bring your own bike along and you learn how to do stuff on your own bike. Or you can kind of observe it happening with others. So maybe if we go back over that. So the Road Safety Authority bus thing is on the central campus. It's plunked there for the day. Mm-hmm. And that's just near the library. The Bike Right 1 to 2 bike skills session is just outside the library as well. The talks at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. by the Road Safety Authority, that's in the Hardiman Building seminar room, and there'll be signs up. And in the evening, we're again very near the where the shuttle bus is, just outside the Arts Millennium Building.
Okay.
So that's all in the part of the university which is called the Central Campus, but it's near the library there. It's near where the big yellow structure is that I think is still called Archimedes Balls.
Brilliant. And in terms of Galway and cycling, do you find Galway City a safe place for cyclists?
I'm afraid to say not particularly, no.
What are the big problems or issues?
Oh, look, there's plenty of them in a way, but like at one level I'm here talking about promoting cycling. And I'm mad into cycling, and so we have 150 members in our club and people love the bike. But the downside sometimes is the experience with cars. So, like, and even as I'm talking about the Road Safety Authority shuttle unit, I'd love to see something like in the driver theory training for people who are looking to get a pass or test. I'd love to see the experience of being on a bike and having a car right beside you or cutting across right in front of you. So I think driver awareness is a huge thing, and I really don't think drivers are aware of how vulnerable you are on a bicycle. And I know what we're doing next week is trying to build up skills and confidence for people cycling bikes. But I often feel like cyclists do need to be safety aware, but often they are because actually they're vulnerable. So when you cycle a bike in the city, you do know that you're a vulnerable unit and people are going by with a big hunk of metal that actually at any moment could take you out. The big problems are, I think, just drivers, they either don't see you. It's a bit like you're invisible at times. Sometimes drivers don't see you and the infrastructure is not good. Like even as I cycle here myself this morning, like there's all kinds of awkward ways to get across from Chantla to here, which is where I live. Including some of the bike lanes are great for a bit and then they stop just in the middle of the road. So there's, in fact, it might be nice to do a bit of training with the planners as well on virtual reality cycling your bike in Galway City, if we were to go that far. But look, but I think most drivers don't want to kill a cyclist, but I think drivers need to waken up and realise that the closer you are to a cyclist, and the less you can see them, and I'm not talking about cyclists who don't have of bikes in their lights on their bikes, because I know that happens. But I mean, even daytime when you're not seen, I think drivers need to just really realise that do you want to have the experience or actually you want to knock down somebody and really limit their life opportunities again or kill them.
Mm. And I know you're very passionate that cycling is for everyone.
Indeed. Yeah.
Explain to me a bit about that.
Because I think there is, because I had it myself actually, I think there is a perception that cycling clubs are for really fast, elite, maybe men, younger men, or maybe older men. But actually our club has, with 150 members, a third of them are women. And within that profile, there's everybody from, I think we have a 13-year-old now, up to a man and a woman who are 78. And Yvonne, who is 78, only took upcycling 10 years ago. Tom, who is our other oldest man at 78, is a really super cyclist, and he climbs big mountains and hills that many of us wouldn't even dream of getting up without an electric bike. But so, and within that, even for myself, like 7 years ago, I always cycled a bit, but I never was a member of a sports club. I kind of thought that that was for other people. I thought the world was divided into people that were sporty and those that weren't. And I was in the non-sporty end of things. And Galway Bay Cycling Club ran a cycle initiative, Bike for Life, it was called, a bit like Couch to 50K. And I joined that and then really never looked back. And it has really opened up my world. It's so social. It's so good for you. And ultimately for me, I was diagnosed 4 years ago with lung cancer, which came out of the blue. I was just turning 50 that year, and totally out of the blue. I had weird symptoms. Tingling in my legs was the main one, and was diagnosed with an incurable lung cancer. And I'm still on the bike. So I haven't been fit up to that diagnosis, and being able to still cycle with the club is a massive thing. Mm. And I really, really would like to kind of emphasize the idea for somebody who likes a bit of cycling and maybe would like to do more, but don't have the confidence or don't think they're the right fit, to embrace the idea that actually that maybe you are. And that if you don't approach a club and maybe ask the question, then you'll never know. And, you know, it is a case of there are faster groups on the road. We have lots of our members who do racing. We have lots of members who do fast leisure. And then there's some of us who do slower leisure. Still pedaling away, still getting the miles in, but maybe not in the same kind of hurry that the others are. And partly because we're not maybe able, but also because we don't really want to kill ourselves on pedaling.
Well, your health is your wealth. And for you personally and your illness, how has that affected your cycling?
Yeah, it's a good question. I was a non-smoker, never smoker, which actually is an important message as well, that not everybody who gets lung cancer is a smoker. And even for those that do, they don't deserve it in the same way. There's a lot of stigma around lung cancer, but in my case, I never really had lung symptoms. I'm on an active treatment now, which is called targeted therapy. Basically, I take a small little capsule drug once a day, and I've been on that treatment for 4 years now and will remain on treatment. But it hasn't... So my lungs were never really compromised, but we managed to persuade our surgeon in UCHG, great team there altogether, to do surgery, and I had a lobectomy, so I had almost half of my right lung removed. So since then, I'm slower in the hills for sure. And actually, I'm sorry to admit it, but it is true. In the last year, I also got an electric bike, so I'm kind of cheating. So we kind of looked at it as a club and asked ourselves, is it appropriate and is it a useful thing and is there any danger? And we came to the conclusion that it isn't. So we have a policy now on electric bikes, so people can use them. But they cut out at 25k speed, so if you're in the faster groups, you won't be using them anyway. So that's made a big difference to somebody like me getting up the hills. I can stay with the group. I'm okay in the flat, but not as good on the hills.
Yeah, but I think it's nice as well, because someone who got your diagnosis might say, ah, to hell with the bike, but you obviously enjoy it and you're still doing it.
It's also good for you. Like, there's a lot of research saying that exercise is good for cancer. Now, I'm not fatigued, which is useful, but having good fitness... It's a massive thing. It's also very good for your mental health, and it broadens your social network. So for me, it's a total win-win. But I don't know. I'm not the type to sit in the corner anyway. Life really is for living, whether your lifespan might be shorter or longer. It really, people should kind of embrace the now, and it sounds a bit cheesy, I think, but it's true. We have one life, it is now, so we might as well get out and do things that you like.
Definitely. Going back to National Bike Week then, Una, you mentioned that there's going to be a bike skills session and the RSA are going to be involved in all that. Is that side of things to kind of train up the cyclists themselves?
Yeah, so the whole focus on our day, it's not on drivers, it's on cyclists. So the focus is on building up your skills, building up your confidence, building up your resilience really on a bike so that you can manage as best you can, and kind of introducing the notion as well that if you build up your confidence and if you kind of get to know your bike a bit better, you can go further. You can go a bit longer because you can now fix a puncture, and you can go down hills maybe because you've kind of cornered your own fear, stuff like that. So on the 15th, we've just a 1 hour session, but we are looking at doing a regular thing, something like once a month, doing bike skills regularly for people who want to build up the confidence and skills, and maybe as a way of introducing them also to our club, which is Galway Bay Cycling Club. And even over the years, I've seen people start small, including Debbie O'Flaherty, who I'm sure is listening. She started kind of doing a bit of a cycle and now she's doing some racing.
Oh.
Just that really small moves can, if you like it and want to keep going, you can actually move on into something called a development league, which is for racing. And we also have gravel cycling, which is off-road cycling as well for people who maybe don't want to experience too much of the cars.
And how do you ensure that you're getting the right people at these bike skills sessions as well? Because I'd say a lot of your members are very well trained up in the whole cycling sphere, but I'm sure there's other rogue cyclists who are up on footpaths and breaking red lights, etc. There's a bit of it coming in this morning.
Yeah, I mean, rogues are rogues, and often you don't get the people who actually need the bike skills turning up to the bike skills, unfortunately. I don't know. I mean, you have to go back into the not, you know, just because somebody does something doesn't mean that all cyclists are the same. And ultimately, cyclists need to look out for their own safety. So any move they make, they need to be conscious that they could be endangering their own lives. So we're trying to get the word out. Thanks for having us here today to let people know that it's happening. So we can't, look, it's really people opt in, they show up with their bike for the bike skills session, or they don't. But I think if we did do more of it, it might just increase the opportunities for people to turn up again. Bike week isn't brilliant in that most students are off campus, for example, in the University of Galway on that week. But we decided to do it anyway then and potentially do more of it in the future. And the other thing I might say is that once a year we do that bike for life kind of program. And in fact, if there was a bigger demand, we could do it more. So if people are interested in potentially doing more cycling, doing more bike skills, they might contact us at GalwayBCC@gmail.com or contact us through our website, which is GalwayBayCycling.com, just to get a sense of what's happening during the year. We also have a Facebook page, but the other two might be the best.
And I know there's also lots of plans in the works for more active travel measures across the city. Are you hopeful in the future of improvements in that vein?
Oh yeah, I mean, absolutely. You'd love it. You know, I feel for parents who would like to cycle with their kids, and I'm very conscious that groups like Galway Cycling Campaign and the Cycling Bus do a great job in introducing cycling to kids or trying to promote cycling or promote active cycling. But there's huge work to be done, and I really think Galway City really particularly isn't cycling friendly. I do cycle still in the city. There are some bits that I'm not particularly comfortable cycling around. Our Sunday spins with our club go on a Sunday morning early at 8:30 to try and avoid some of that manic traffic stuff. But I wouldn't even know where to start about what could be done. But the more roads, the more cycling routes that are separate from cars, the better. And the other thing I might say about that, actually, if I can, is so something that we've started in the last couple of years is something called gravel cycling, which is off-road cycling. And we use the wind farm out there by Roscahill quite a bit to do spins there. So it's totally off-road. Other parts of the county have other lovely off-road sections as well.
And greenways as well.
Yeah, and absolutely greenways. But one of the issues which emerged only in the last few months is that a national directive from Quilche has indicated that there will not now be any legitimate organised cycling in Quilche land. So you can't organise events there. And once a year, for the last couple of years, we had a big massive event called Galway Gravel Grinder, which last year, it started in Mike Cullen and went to mostly around the wind farm. But we had about 600 people doing it last year. It was a fabulous event. People really loved it. But we can't run it this year now because of the Quilche directive. I don't understand what's behind that.
Well, just to defend Quilche, because they're not here to defend themselves, maybe there's biodiversity issues and other issues. It is their land to do with what they like in many ways. But maybe it opens up the discussion for other people to perhaps open up venues for you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Biodiversity is not being given as the reason. We're not being given a reason for what was clear access and negotiated, and our insurance was totally covering the event and everything, so indemnity was there.
Yeah.
But it is a national directive which impacts different parts of the county and impacts us for sure. So it is disappointing in a context where the roads are becoming or are less safe for cyclists when there's a whole area where you can get loads of miles in, but that you're not allowed to organise events there now. So that is hugely disappointing.
Well, we'll leave it open to Quilche if they want to give us a response on that. And if you find out yourselves anything in the meantime, you might let us know as well. But Una McArdle, the Secretary of Galway Bay Cycling, best of luck with all the cycling future, and thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks, John.
Just some of the comments coming in. Have to agree with your cycling guest. Galway is unsafe, some of which is due to being unfairly linked with the anti-green, anti-climate rhetoric on social media, which portrays cyclists as prey for road users. Another listener says, Una's story is brilliant. There's a whole generation who never learned to cycle here, and it would be great if they could build up their confidence so that they can cycle about with their own children. And plenty more comments coming in this morning. If you want to get them in, do so straight away to our text and WhatsApp line at 086-3833-553. You can phone Avon reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Still to come in the next hour of the programme, we'll be hearing from Adrian Cummins, who is the Restaurants Association of Ireland Chief Executive, about the poor engagement with the warehouse tax deadline. So he's highlighted that because it's been a big problem, and it's emerged that just last week, 11,000 businesses did not engage with the revenue commissioners on time. So there could be a lot of fallout from that in that industry, in that sector. We're also looking at a number of other things, including the Connacht Tribune headlines. We have Orla Nichovry, who is the host of the Galway meeting and secretary of the Irish ME and CFS Association, because they're on a national tour giving talks for ME Awareness Month. And finally, in the next hour, we'll be looking at a range of other issues, including an important topic with mental health as well. So that's and more to come on the programme today. As well as that, we have some live music. Dave Devaney and his brother Jake will be performing as they are launching their new album in the summer. Title to be confirmed. We've Ours to Protect, where I speak to Conal O'Quinn. And he was selected randomly for the EU Citizens Panel on Energy Efficiency. It's a fascinating story, and it saw him going from his home place of Westport, where he's living now. He's actually from Athenry, but he had to go over to the parliaments in Europe and even to a session in Dublin and an online session as well, all to see how random EU citizens want the European Union to engage with making the Union and all the countries and states in it more energy efficient. And we have Culture Corner, And today is the turn of Portumna Community School because they're all building up. They were at their dress rehearsal yesterday. I saw a bit of myself for their production of Sister Act. And it's going to be a great production because they have the likes of the one of the Power Twins involved, their musical director there in the school, and many others involved as well. And while I was in Portumna yesterday, I started a little bit of work for Friday week because Community Matters comes to Portumna on Friday week and a venue will be announced very shortly on that. But we're starting to do a bit of groundwork on it. If you're in Portumna and you have a story to tell, or if you know of someone quite interesting we should get on the programme from Portumna, do let us know now to our phone line. That is 091 77 0077. Email comments at goibayfm.ie, and you can also text and WhatsApp us on 086 38 33 553. Some other topics and things coming into us here on our text lines this morning. Just a reminder that there are a number of initiatives we're running here on the programme, including Galway Greats. If you have anyone you want to nominate for our Galway Greats segment, let us know. We run it every Monday after 11 o'clock and we'll be announcing our Monday Galway Great very shortly. We're going to be back with you after the news and we're looking at the Restaurants Association and their call for the warehouse tax debt to be tackled. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.